show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
There is no life I know to compare with your imagination. Living there, you'll be free. If you truly wish to be.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's been a couple weeks since we recorded our last show, and with me, of course, is the unflappable Michael Engel. Mike, has there been anything that has happened to the Royals in the last 2 weeks of note?
I'm trying to think. Let's see. Well, I mean, they won a couple of series here and there, and they did, the bullpen kind of went and became, a full team of cyborgs instead of a few of them. But, besides that, not really. Yeah. I mean, they made up some ground in some playoff races and blah, blah, blah,
for whatever that's worth.
Boring things like that. Old hat. Typical Royals baseball, late season surge, yawn, second half team, 15 of 20 win, whatever. Been there, done that. Show me something new.
Been there, done that. 18-5 in the last 23 games, whatever.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the question, though, in all seriousness. I mean, should we be surprised at this point? I mean, we've seen, whether you want to talk about the 2013 team and the second half run they made, the 2014 team, the 15 and the 16 out of 20 run they made to surge in the second half into the playoffs, the 2015 team and the multiple surges they had throughout the season. And then now this year, you're looking at an 18-5 stretch that they're currently in. Hopefully they don't fall out of it. And we have to retroactively stop the arbitrary endpoint sooner. Right. But should we really be surprised at this point that this team has done something like this when pretty much everybody to a man counted them out?
I guess it's got to be something that is just part of the DNA of this team now. It's weird. It's the weirdest thing. When Dayton Moore said that in 2014 or mm-hmm. in the middle of July, he's like, I think we could win 15 of our next 20. It's like, ha ha, okay, whatever. You're fighting for your job. You're trying to stay employed. And then they go and do it. And it's like, okay, fine, whatever,
Yeah. Blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then, right?
And then they just kind of kept doing that. It's just like, yeah, I mean, I'm at the point now where, and I said this in our BP Kansas City chat, I think I said it like yesterday or something. I was like, next year, just don't let me count this team out, because eventually they're going to do it. I mean, three, 4 weeks ago, we were basically...
We gave the eulogy on the season.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I played the Light of the Seven song from Game of Thrones as the intro because it was somber and dramatic, and I emailed you and I was like, well, since the Royals aren't going to be interesting over the next 2 months, what should we talk about on the show? And then they go and
discussed a fall TV schedule discussion.
Right, just something to fill time.
That's because, where the Royals were at.
Yeah, and now they go on this run in August where basically it's one of their best months in franchise history, and they're right back in it. So yeah, I think at this point you kind of have to be of the mindset that, you know what, as long as this group is together, yeah, they're not going to count themselves out. They're not going to be out of it. And even in a rough year where, they're missing some parts and some guys aren't really performing like you expect, they still put it together. And, you can't count them out in pretty much any game like we saw last year, or, in a playoff race. It's remarkable and surprising and a little bit crazy.
And the best part is they're doing it the way that, the 2015 team was doing it. And that is to say, it seems like there's a different person every night. It's not just dependent on, okay, Eric Hosmer's really hot right now, so let's ride this. It's just Eric Hosmer will have a 3-for-4 night, and then the next night he'll go, 1-for-4. But then Raul Mondesi hits a triple with, two men on or bases loaded or whatever it was, and gets some RBIs to give a big lead, or Alcides Escobar hits 2 home runs in a week for the first time ever, maybe for him. I mean,
probably, yeah.
It's and a 3-run homer to boot. I mean, it feels like there's a different person every night stepping up while they've been on this run. And that's what's really great to see, because when you can't key on one guy, I think that's what drives people nuts the most about the Royals. When the Royals played Toronto in the ALCS last year, like, that lineup, was so good, but you knew you had to focus on, okay, we got Donaldson, Bautista, and Encarnacion. Those are the three big guys that you really needed to make sure didn't hurt you. And Tulowitzki didn't have the best season last year, but he's probably in that category as well. So, you could probably throw him in and say those four guys. And then, the Royals, I think the perception is you say, okay, well, they've got Eric Hosmer and Salvador Perez and everything, but I mean, people, even with the Lorenzo Cain finishing third in MVP voting last year, I still don't feel like, and this isn't, the normal like disrespect angle, but I still don't feel like the perception is, I feel like the perception is that was just a really good year for him, and that it's not, that he's not that kind of a player, that he's not that dynamic that you need to really plan around him. But, he was gone for the month of July. Royals had one of the worst months in franchise history. He's been back since the beginning of August, and they have one of the best months. Coincidence? Mostly so. But, there's definitely a little bit more correlation there than just zero. There's part of it has been the rest of the team has played better too, but then you also have to ask, like, how much of an integral piece is Lorenzo Cain to that hole, that once he's inserted back into the lineup, everything flows a lot better. And it does, when you have a player as dynamic as him. So the ripple effect, if you will, has shown up. But I mean, even throughout August, Lorenzo Cain's been back. Alex Gordon got hot there for a while.
Yep.
And Eric Hosmer's he kind of had his ups and downs ever since that really hot start, and then he cooled off quite a bit. Chester Cuthbert has had some decent moments. You've had, like I said, Raul Mondesi has had, he had his first big league home run off Justin Verlander a little bit ago. And then you have, he mostly looks lost at the plate, hitting right about a solid 195 or so right now, but a svelte 195. But he's had some big hits. He's had some big moments. He's at the point now where you can clearly see, okay, he has a future in Major League Baseball. The future isn't now for him,
right?
But it's there, and it'll be cool. It'll be fun to see him develop into hopefully that top flight player that he can be. But even he's had his moments. And then Gerard Dyson had the catch of the year a few games ago, yep, robbing a home run. And this is the first ever home run robbed in Marlins Park. Is that right? Did I hear
that
right?
That's what I heard.
That can't be right.
It's only a couple years old, but at the same time,
2012,
it's like,
right?
It is yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a big park. So, I mean, that there's a lot of ground to cover. You do have to kind of cover the alley. So I get that. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, I don't know. I guess think about how many times a year you watch the Royals and somebody actually has a play on a ball that might go out. I guess maybe it makes sense, but it just seemed like, you know, you would have game after game after game available there where you could have a player make a play like that. It's just,
it just feels like any time there is a first time ever in baseball, I'm just naturally skeptical because it's been around so long. There's so many games. Mm-hmm. There's so many opportunities for X thing to happen that something that has never happened before just seems like there's no way. But that's what they say. I'm going with it. So, right. But that's just kind of a summation of the point. I mean, it's just people have been stepping up, and it's been great to see. The pitching staff has been great. Like you mentioned, the bullpen has just become this – you know, I mean, you look at the evolution of this thing going from 2014, you know, you were riding Greg Holland, who had one of the, was it 2013? Greg Holland had that really good, one of the best really years for a reliever in Royals history. They had the shirt the next year. I think that was 2013. He had that. And then 2014, they had the shirt.
Am I thinking of that right? 2013, they had the shirt, the get it to this guy or get it to that guy. Shirt?
No, the or, one they gave away for it's like a T-shirt Tuesday, and it had all his stats on the back. Oh, I have it, actually. I just can't.
I don't remember. I mean, it probably would have been because in 2013 they were still kind of getting things together, and then 2014 you basically had HDH and good pieces, not great. You know, it was basically a three-man superstar bullpen. And then last year they expanded it, and this year it's just like anybody you put out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's
doing stuff. Chengming Wong is a 3 ERA in the month of August. It's crazy. It shouldn't happen.
Yeah, Greg Holland had a 1.21 ERA in 2013. So that was
pretty good.
That's all right. It's but fine. but that's what, you know, he had, like you mentioned, starting in 2014. You have the HGH, and it wasn't even supposed to be that way. Mm-mm. But because Hochaver gets hurt and he had just moved to the bullpen, then Wade Davis had to step in. And, you know, Wade Davis kind of – people don't think people knew what to expect with him in the bullpen, because he'd had some decent years and some pretty good years in Tampa Bay out of the bullpen, but people didn't know. And then he becomes dominant. Then you throw Hochaver back in. Holland's out to injury last year at near the end of the season, but he was kind of up and down all season. And then this year you got Wade Davis and Hochaver out, and then the Royals pull up Matt Strom, and you got Peter Moylan, you know, and this is to say nothing of, you know, your Ryan Madsen's of last year, your Scott Frazier's of years past. I mean, the way that this organization has been able to churn out this bullpen talent, it's just phenomenal.
It's great. Yeah, like I never when they were talking about that, it was what, 41 and a third inning scoreless streak from the bullpen. Yes. Like Brian Flynn had a big part of that too, and like I always forget him. I always forget he's around because he doesn't have that kind of setup role that you kind of look at. Like right now, Herrera is closing until Davis comes back, which should be Friday. Soria has been the primary setup guy, but Matt Strom's the guy who's kind of stepped up into that middle guy, that bridge from the starter to the closing side of it. And so Flynn kind of gets lost in the shuffle. Moylan's pitched in some high leverage spots, and he's done very well. You know, it's crazy to watch those guys do that. And Chengming Wong threw a couple big innings last night, and a couple big innings in Boston, just out of the bullpen. And that's not a guy that you would think against either of those teams, and especially in Boston, was going to do well. And Chris Young, of all guys, is really good out of the bullpen. If you know, you just kind of overlooked the last time he came out of the bullpen the other night, where he was really bad. But throughout the month of August, he was really strong out of the bullpen, and you know, just looks like a completely different pitcher. It's crazy. You get a guy into the bullpen, and they turn into like literally an unhittable pitcher. It's great, and it's anybody. It just seems like anybody you put back there, I gotta imagine if you can't make it in the Royals bullpen, then what are you doing? Like, yeah. What the heck? Like, can we convert Bubba Starling into a reliever? Would that work? Is that a thing that can happen? Because I don't know. It's maybe worth a shot at this.
Kyle Zimmer certainly can.
Well, oh yeah, he's the exception.
I do wonder how much the so take a Chris Young, for example, right? He has, when you put him in a role as a starter in 2015, you know, he was excellent that second half of the year, and he was, you know, very important to the Royals to be able to sustain the success they had for the whole season. Now this year he struggled as a starter. You got to wonder sometimes, at least I do, whether – so Ned Yost, you know, and I remember, I think it was like 2013-ish, maybe 2012, or maybe even further back. I don't know. But when you're talking about Aaron Crow and how Ned Yost was steadfast, you know, he was – you know, Crow's a sixth inning and Herrera's seventh inning and blah, blah, blah. And he had these defined roles, and that was kind of his thing, to have these defined roles for the players, and the idea being that – you know, they respond better when they have these very specific roles that they have to fill. And that's, you know, all they have to worry about. So I do kind of wonder if maybe that's some of the genius. I mean, I feel like most bullpens are run that way, but I don't know, maybe it's a credit to Ned Yost and how he communicates it to the players. But is it easier for a Chris Young to come out and mentally approach coming out of the bullpen knowing, okay, here's what Ned told me I have to do, and he told me I have to do this because it matches my skill set. Whereas if he comes out as a starter, he's like, whatever my skill set is, I have to get through six innings. I can't allow any runs. You know, I mean, there's got to be something to that. And I do wonder if that's part of the Royals, you know, and the success that they've had. And I think it's kind of interesting that they've had such little success in terms of developing starters, with really the only notable ones being Danny Duffy and Yordan Ventura on the current roster, that, you know, it's kind of a weird dynamic when you think like, well, the Royals aren't really good at developing pitching, but then it's like, oh man, they find all these guys in the bullpen and it's been a huge part of their success. So can you really say they're bad at developing pitching? They're bad at developing starting pitching. We can agree to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they do deserve some credit, I think, for what they've been able to do in terms of building this bullpen multiple times over.
I think one of the benefits you get out of the bullpen is you get more of a selectiveness of when you can use those guys. You know, you can bring in Chris Young in a situation that maybe benefits, you know, that maybe works for him better. You're asking some of these guys to get only three outs or only six outs. You know, it gives them an opportunity to really just go with their best stuff. They don't have to worry about times through the order, so they can basically pitch with anything available to them. Whereas as a starter, you might not necessarily throw everything the first time through, just so that you're not showing them, you know, you leave something for later. You might hold back on a changeup just because you want to have that available for the second time if they come up. You know, I don't know. It's I think there's more flexibility in how Ned Yost has chosen to use his guys, some of it out of necessity, just because injuries and you know, some guys being ineffective at different times. But, you know, going back to like what you were talking about, Aaron Crow and, you know, sixth inning is his, a lot of that really changed in 2014. After that, I think it was Daniel Nava hit a grand slam off of Crow. And the really big thought was, well, why not just go to Herrera there? Get, you know, he's a better pitcher. Just use him in that spot, get the outs, and let it work out the rest of the way. And on one hand, you know, when you've got a group like Herrera, Davis, and Holland from 2014, you know, it's kind of an easy paint by numbers, push button managing kind of thing. It's like, all right, let's get through six, and then we go to those three. You know, which seems more scripted, I think, because it worked all the time. There was no reason to veer off of it. There was no reason to do anything differently because you just go to those three. You get your outs, and they all had fantastic mm-hmm. seasons. So I don't think it was necessarily like, you know, like Andy Reid when he used to chart what his first 15 plays on offense. when he was with the Eagles. I don't know if he still does that with the Chiefs, but it's like, this is what we're going to do.
Pretty sure he does.
And so it's not quite the same. And I'm sure Andy Reid leaves some room for, you know, flexibility and whatever. But, you know, I think what you come down to is you start to see this is where Peter Moylan starts to pitch in higher leverage situations because he's shown he can do it. And Matt Strom comes out and is just electric and has this awesome stuff. And you start to use him more just because, well, you found this new weapon. Brian Flynn has been really good. He had a good inning in, I think it was also in Boston, or no, it was in Miami, where he just blew guys away. And it's like you start to see what these guys can do, and you just kind of you push them out there in spots where it works. You know, partially, again, because they don't have Davis, they don't have Hochaver, they don't have Madsen, who, you know, left after last season. You kind of have to mix and match a little bit more. You know that Herrera is a guy that you want to put at the back, and you have Soria, who you feel like should be a good setup guy, but the rest of them, you're not sure. So when you mix that with the weirdness of the fourth and fifth starter spots all season, it turns into this kind of blob of guys going up and down and back and forth and things like that. And they've kind of just had to adjust as it goes. And in August, it worked. It worked great. They got great pitching from everybody except Edinson Volquez. And that includes each of the starters. You know, I think Duffy and Ventura had two rough starts. But otherwise, everybody else, you know, who took the mound was really good. And Duffy and Ventura, their numbers are still really good for the month, even though they had a couple of speed bumps. So, you know, all in all, that plus the offense, like you brought up before, you know, I'm just looking at the month of August, you know, since this is the key month, you know, Gordon 276 average, Morales 275, Escobar 305. He walked seven times in 105 at bats, plus three homers this month. Lorenzo Cain 294, Cuthbert 281, Orlando 280. You know, even though batting average isn't the whole thing, it shows you that, you know, that's, you know, two thirds of the lineup that's been very consistent in that kind of range. Plus you get Gordon hit seven homers, Perez hit five, Morales is at five. You got a lot of guys hitting the ball well right now. And that, you know, you compare that to earlier in the season where you basically had two guys in the lineup who were hitting well at a time. And it was really difficult to score runs. And the Royals kind of hung on up until July where the pitching bottomed out. You know, now you've got a lot of balance everywhere. And it's, you know, when that happens, I think this is what you see. You see a really strong team on the field and one of the better months the Royals have ever had. And it's you hope it continues. You hope they found whatever the magic charm, lucky charm is for this. I mean,
I have an idea what it is.
Yeah, Mike. I know you do. I have an idea. But
what it may be.
Yeah.
It's the rally mantis, of course. I had to say it. It's got to be out there. He's got a quota now. We've got a quota for rally mantis. I have my own non-real but stuffed rally mantis at my house now. So I bring it out and it watches the games with me. It wasn't enough last night though, unfortunately.
Almost.
But things happen. Almost. It was close.
That was a game they really should have probably lost like 9-4 anyway.
Yes.
And they had a shot to win it. And you know, once you get to that point, you want to win it, but.
Yeah, you really thought they were going to steal. We're talking about the game on August 30th against the Yankees. They lost after. I mean, you look at a situation where Edinson Volquez comes in, or he's starting the game, gives up four runs in three and a third. There's an hour rain, 59-minute rain delay. They come back. They're chewing through the bullpen. They scratch and they claw and they just kind of they do their royal thing. And then the next thing you know, it's tied. And then, you know, the Royals have a golden opportunity with bases loaded, or they had men on second and third with no outs.
Not just any men. It was Mondesi and Dyson.
Mondesi and Dyson,
the two guys you would want in that situation.
And then you had bases loaded with one out and you couldn't get a single run and they end up losing the game. I mean, missed opportunity. And, you know, a lot of people brought it up today. You know, the typical, like, oh, if they missed the playoffs, you know, by one game, you're going to go back and look at that game and say that's it, you know. It's like, I mean, sure, you could do that.
It'll stick
the exercise,
out, sure.
There's, you know, if they miss the playoff by one game, they're going to have 75 losses or so, you know. So you're going to have 74 other opportunities to look back and say, well, you know, I mean, let's go back to May, right? My birthday, May 10th, Lorenzo Cain hits three home runs off Masahiro Tanaka in Yankee Stadium, and they lose that game. You know, to me, that's almost more disappointing than last game when they were outplayed the entire game, shouldn't even have been close. And they almost won it, you know. So obviously you don't want to leave a game on the table like that. But anytime you get three home runs from one player, there's no reason you should lose that game, and they lost it, you know. So I mean, you can play this game if you want to, but in fact the matter is the Royals, you know, they're going to make it exciting down the stretch. The odds are not with them to make the playoffs, but we've seen crazier things happen with this team. You know, but ultimately everything is going to come back to, if they don't make the playoffs and if it's only a couple games. It's at July, you know. I mean, you go 7-19 in a month. What do you expect? I mean,
yeah.
You know, they flip three of those games around, and you're 10-16, which is still a really bad month. And you know, right now, if that was the case, if they say they went 10-16 that month, they'd be 72-60 right now, and they would be firmly tied with Baltimore for the second wild card spot. They'd be a game ahead of Detroit, two games ahead of Houston, and you know, probably looking pretty good because Baltimore's kind of on a downslope right now. So they'd be, and they'd only be a game behind Boston for that first slot.
Yep.
So I mean, you know, the idea of, you know, look at that one game in baseball, it doesn't really, like last year, okay, with the Chiefs. You know, the Chiefs were 11-5. They were the 5 seed in the playoffs. And they had they had two games, obviously the big game against the Broncos, and then the game that I looked at was the
Bears game.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. They lose it in the last 40 seconds. They just
they were leading the whole game and they lost it.
Yeah, they just swat that ball down and they don't score a touchdown. The Bears, I mean, Chiefs win that game. They're the one seed in the playoffs. And maybe they win the Super Bowl last year instead of the Broncos. You know, who knows? But in football, it's a lot easier to look back at that one game. You know, but in baseball, the reason people talk about stretches so much, and when you look at standings, the reason they often show what the team has done over the last 10 is because that's what's more relevant than just one game. So, you know, saying the Royals lost, you know, last night could be the reason they don't make the playoffs. While theoretically true, you know, as one game and part of an 18-5 stretch, you say, okay, whatever. You know, they're still doing really well at making a charge at this thing. Whereas when you look back at July and you say, okay, they had a 7-19 stretch, that's the more likely scenario of why they don't make the playoffs.
Yep. I mean, every game counts. That's why when you say, well, it's only April, it's only May, there's some truth to that because, you know, there is still a lot of time in the baseball season to make up a bad loss, but it's still, you know, that's a loss you have to make up later. Like this is, well, yesterday was pretty rough because the Royals lost that game in the manner that they lost it, and every other team, well, Boston lost, but every other team that they're chasing ended up winning. So that's a game that they have to make up, and it's a game that they have to figure that the other teams have to drop, and that's where the difficulty comes in. And that, you know, that's why the odds are against them. It's not even so much that the Royals have to play well. The Royals could play really well over this next month, still miss the playoffs with 87 or 88 wins because they still have to get Boston or Baltimore and or Detroit and or Houston to all play poorly. And the Yankees have to continue to play poorly, and Seattle, who they're fading, but they're still not out of it. You know, they could get hot and go on a big stretch too. There, you have to rely on these teams to do poorly while also doing well yourself. And that's the difficulty of it all is, you know, if you're not in position to kind of hold off and give yourself a little bit of a cushion, it's really tough. And the Royals have a heck of a climb still to go, Now, they've made up a lot of ground. I mean, they passed the Yankees, and the White Sox have dropped out completely. They were kind of floating around in there. Houston has kind of gotten back into it, but I don't know that they feel like really a big kind of threat. It kind of feels to me like Boston and Detroit are probably the two that if I were to put money on them, those would be the two wild card teams I would bet on. But there's still, you know, Baltimore could still hit their way through it. Their rotation is terrible, but they could probably hit enough that they could get in there. The Royals could stay hot. You know, if the Royals stay really hot and one of those three teams of Baltimore, Detroit, or Boston really tumble, there's your opportunity. But, you know, those are a lot of factors that the Royals don't have control over that you need to happen for the Royals to make it. It could still happen. It's not crazy. It's something that is mathematically possible, and it's practically possible. It's just that it's, you know, it's a lot against.
It's going to be really hard.
It is. And, you know, while it's really exciting, you know, there is a realist part of me that is like, okay, there's a very good chance they won't finish this off. If they do, though, it'll be awesome. And I think that's what keeps my perspective in check when it comes to a loss like last night, which was really disappointing. Don't get me wrong. It was a really disappointing way to lose, especially when it's a game that I kind of wrote off as Tanaka, okay, and then Volquez was terrible in all of his innings. You know, at that stage, I was like, all right, I'm ready to move on from this game. And the Royals were not, and almost got themselves a win. You know, there's a lot of things that could have went right for them that didn't, and could have gotten them a win. And if they win that game in that manner, then that almost feels like a free one. But at the same time, you know, it's not enough that's going to get me freaked out, you know, just because there's still a month left. They're still playing well. Kennedy, Duffy, Ventura, those guys are all pitching well. Dylan G's pitching well. The bullpen is pitching well. Wade Davis is coming back. These are all good things. And if the Royals stay hot and other teams maybe falter, then yeah, they can get into it. You know, it'll be disappointing if they don't make it, but at the same time, I'm not going to go, you know, woe is me and faint upon the couch and things like that. You know, I mean, it'll suck. I mean, don't get me wrong. After, you know, 2 years where you make the playoffs and go deep in both trips, you know, you definitely want to get back. And I think it'd be really fun if they made it because, you know, as we've talked about on this show a couple times, you know, if you got to face the Royals in a playoff series, good luck.
You're not excited about it.
You're not. That is a pesky team that nobody would want to face. But at the same time, they've got to get there. And, you know, the odds aren't great for them to do that. But the odds aren't insurmountable either. So that until that happens, until they're completely out of it, you know, I'm going to live and die and it's going to be anxious, but, you know, it's not necessarily going to be something
it's
where,
be fun.
Yeah, it's not where I'm going to be like freaking out just because they lost a game. You know, they've still got some time to make it up. Now, if they go on like a 1-4 stretch or something, okay, then you start to feel pretty bad, but you know, they haven't done that yet. So I'm gonna wait until that happens to freak out, I think.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the 18-5 stretch that they're currently on is really good. But you think about, okay, they've got exactly 30 games left this season. If they go 18-12, right, which is really good. That's a .600 winning percentage. That's a 97 win pace over the course of an entire season. Okay, so that's better than the entire team was last year for an entire season. So it's easier to do it in a short stretch, of course. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're looking – if that's what they do, point being it's really hard to go 18-12. And if they do that, that's really good. But they're still only at 87 wins. And that's going to be real borderline. You know, there's a good chance they're going to miss, you know, the playoffs or miss that wild card by a game or two, based on how everything looks like it's going to shake out right now. Because if you're going to try and pass Baltimore, then you're asking Baltimore to go, to go 14-16 the rest of the way. You know, again, that's possible, but that's asking a lot. Mm-hmm. And then you're asking Detroit can't go any better than 15-15. And Houston can go only, what is it, only 16-13. You know what I mean? So you go on down the line, and it's, you know, all these teams have to do basically average or worse, and you have to be well above average. It's tough. It's a tough climb to get there, and I think the Royals are going to make it exciting. There's no reason they can't. But and actually, I mean, if you think about it, they basically, you have to win 20 out of 30 games if you even want a shot at this game to get to 89 wins.
Yeah.
And then if they do that, I mean, think about that. That'd be a 38-15 finish to the season. Now, when
it's crazy,
it is crazy.
It's really good.
It is. Now, if you think about this, what did the Royals? I mean, there was their finish in 2014 was actually pretty comparable to that. Let's see, they were 41-22 to finish the season, right? Because they were 48-50,
mm-hmm.
and they finished 41-23. Is what they finished from that point in 2014. So then now, if they finished, or that would be 38-15. I mean, that's even better than that. And they still barely made it. So it's a tall order. They can certainly do it, and it would be super fun to see them do it. And again, I mean, if you're facing a Royals team, like you just said, Mike, that's coming in on this hot streak, I mean, that's not going to be fun to try and game plan for that. And, you know, I mean, problem being, you know, you've got of the four teams ahead of you right now, you know, Boston and Baltimore both have ballparks that are – not favorable to yeah. how the Royals play baseball. So
same with Houston.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
I don't like Houston as well. Either,
so Detroit would be okay, but because chances are, the Royals are making the playoffs, they're going to be traveling.
Probably.
It's not going to be like 2014, but I mean, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. You know, sure. Obviously, just gotta make it. But I really think they're going to be in it. They're going to miss, you know, maybe by a day or two, but then. Or a game or two. But then if you really – you kind of take a step back and you think, okay, the decades of crap that we dealt with in Royals baseball, and you look at this last 4 years, say the Royals end up with 87 wins, right? Say they finish the 18-12.
Yep.
Then you'd go 86 in 2013, 89 in 2014, 95 last year, and then 87 this year. I mean, an average of – you know, that's – close to 90 wins, 88, 89 ish wins over the course of four seasons. And, you know, they've still got next year where with a healthy squad, you know, who knows, it could be even better. So it's, you know, it didn't take long for us Royals fans to get spoiled, I guess is what.
It's true. Next. It really is true. I mean, it's weird to kind of think back even to 2013 where it was like, it was just exciting to be in it up to the last week. It was like, oh, cool. We're scoreboard watching, you know, what has to happen? And you're looking at all the different permutations of what has to happen. Even though it was improbable, you still, you know, got that kind of charge. I think that was the year where Carlos Pena was on the roster and there was a game. I don't remember who it was against. I feel like it was against Houston, but maybe it was like Tech, or I don't remember who they were playing, but he was up there and it was like as tense a moment in baseball as I'd probably remember watching, just because the Royals hadn't been in that situation before. Mm-hmm. And he didn't come through and people freaked out, but it was still like, it was a whole different feeling to what that game was. And that was in like the middle of September. It wasn't really anything. It was just this random game in the end. But, you know, that was the first kind of bit of it that you start to feel that kind of thing. And then 2014, they go on the run. They, you know, they obviously win that wild card game. Just at that point, even clinching the playoffs was enough means to celebrate. You know, last year, I think they won the division. I was just kind of hanging out at home. I was like, it was exciting. It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. But it wasn't like we have to make this eventful. It was all right. And probably part of that has to do with the fact that the Royals won it very easily and took the division without any trouble. But, you know, it was still that would probably be a bigger deal if they hadn't made it the year before. And this year, it's kind of like, even when they were in first earlier in the year, it had a good feeling, but it wasn't like the same kind of feeling. Now that they're kind of making this late charge, it does have that kind of 2014 feel to it, whereas this team that has to really overcome a, you know, bad record at one point and jump over a lot of teams and get a lot of help, but they're playing very well, and so they're doing a lot of the damage themselves. It's, you know, if they make it, it'll be one heck of a story, and I'm fully prepared for the rest of baseball fandom to just be really annoyed with us, because that's fun, really.
Yes.
You know, it's really fun. Damn Royals. Yep. Like, I saw someone say something like that. I was like, keep them out. Like, yeah, I like that. Yes. I like to hear it.
Love it. And, you know, the best part about it is you look at – okay, so the Royals, they kind of took care of business against Boston recently, for at least they did, you know, as much of their part as you would expect. They took
won
two out
a series
three.
On the road. That's,
you know, there's not much more you can ask. You can ask for a sweep, I suppose, but, you know, taking two out of three from the team that's, you know, the best or the first wild card right now. And then the rest of the way, though, you think, okay, well, they've got a Detroit, one of the major teams they have to overtake to get that second wild card spot. And then if they're still gunning for the division, they've got to worry about Cleveland too. They got six games against each. So if you're going to ballpark this and you say, okay, 12 games between Cleveland and Detroit, you know, three in Cleveland, three in Detroit, and then six at home. What do the Royals have to do in those 12 games to really, let's say, if the Royals are going to make a run at the division, right? I mean, it's last night hurt, but, you know, what do they have to do in those 12 games, in your opinion, to really make this a plausible thing that could happen?
It's tough. I mean, when you've got, you almost have to sweep one of those series against Cleveland, pretty much. I mean, right now it's 6.5 games behind Cleveland. It's not the, I mean, that's a good team.
Because even you, say you go 5-1 against Cleveland, that's still only, you're still 2.5 games back.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you're looking at, you still need a lot of help. I think, is it, yeah, it's Detroit I'm thinking of. Detroit plays Atlanta the last series of the year. That's fun. Mm-hmm. Good for them. That's the difficulty. You've got to make up those head-to-head games, and the Royals haven't played great against Cleveland at all this year. Cleveland's, you know, they're a good team, to their credit. They've got good starting pitching. So you've got to basically meet – you probably get about the same guys in their rotation in each series. So you're going to have to beat, like, Danny Salazar twice, probably. You're probably going to have to face Kluber at least once. And, you know, that's a tough order. You know, it's tough task. Let's use my words.
Tall order,
tough to, you know, whatever. It's just, that's, they've got to probably win like five games out of that, unless Cleveland falls down. And that unless, that dependent, you know, that conditional clause there is always going to be the thing the rest of this month, because there's not any wiggle room. It's not like the Royals are fending off and defending a spot. They're trying to climb in, you know, they're trying to siege the castle, and, you know, they don't have that advantage of, you know, having a safe perch more or less. So they've got to, you know, get some luck from other teams falling down. And, you know, for Cleveland, that means they've got to play poorly over this next month. You know, and it could, a 1-7 stretch by a team this time of year can be all it takes, because there are so many teams bunched up closely that could make the difference, especially if other teams are playing well, and especially if it's head-to-head. So I think they got to go to Cleveland and win two of those games, and then they got to sweep at home. And, I mean, that'd be crazy to get into that situation where you could win the division at home if you sweep. And
that'd be nuts. A game behind
going into it. That'd be nuts. God, that'd be crazy. You know, it's the same kind of thing with Detroit. They played Detroit very well this year, but Detroit's playing probably about as well as they played all season right now. They've got to beat them head to head too. And you know, it's not going to be easy. If it was easy, I guess it wouldn't be as interesting, but it's still something they've got to go head to head against those guys and just beat them. I think what Leske always brings up, I think he's brought this up in like two Friday notes and brought it up again today, I think, in a post on BP Kansas City about September. It was like, if the Royals win every series the rest of the way but don't sweep them, they go 20-9, not counting tonight's game against the Yankees. If they win all of those series, they'll go 20-9. Let's say they win tonight against the Yankees. That would get them to 90 wins. But you have to win every series. And even though some of those teams are the Twins and the White Sox and the A's, you still got to win 3 out of 4 in a couple of four-game series against the A's and then the White Sox. It's not easy, and it's going to be you know, the Royals have to make up ground, and that's what it's going to take. They have to basically win every series from here on out. You know, if they don't, they have to sweep some, and maybe they can drop a series. But you know, they've got to make up whatever win that they give away and prevent whatever losses they can, just because, you know, like I said, a 1-7 stretch, I mean, that's fatal for the Royals if that happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's done. It's just going to be too difficult for them. They'd have to do like a 20-5 stretch. And it just, I mean, that doesn't work with the remaining games, but that's the kind of thing they'd have to do. They would just not have enough time to get enough wins to make up the ground that they need to. So those head-to-head matchups are going to be important, and just maintaining the consistency that they've had, you know, consistent production from about everybody in August. So it's not easy, but it's not impossible.
Yeah, and you look at Cleveland has 6 games against Detroit as well, and Cleveland is 11-1 against Detroit so far this year. You know, so the better scenario that you should probably root for, still say maybe take 2 out of 3 from each series left with Cleveland, but then hope that Cleveland just demolishes Detroit, winning 5 right. or all 6 of those games, and then you win 4 or 5 of those games against Detroit, and then that actually gives you probably a pretty decent cushion.
Probably wipes Detroit out.
You if you just take 4 out of the rest of the 6, then you tie with them, assuming they do, you know, everything else is equal. And then, yeah, just as you said, if Cleveland wins 5 or 6 of those 6 games, then Detroit's gone. They're out of the picture. So that's probably the better thing to hope for in this scenario. Exactly. One fewer team. And then you talk about, you know, if Houston, if they've got what it takes, you know, if Baltimore's got what it takes. I mean, those teams, we talk about them needing to go 500 or worse. You know, that's very plausible for those teams just because of the inconsistencies they've shown so far this season. So, I mean, that's, you know, there's a lot of different permutations that could be at work here. It's going to be certainly a lot of fun to see how it all shakes out. That's
for sure. I think at this stage, I don't know if the division's realistic just because it's so, I mean, it is, it's possible, but it does seem like the Royals just won't get there. It's a lot of ground to make up in a month. They can still do it, but they have to have perfect conditions to do it. Not that they don't for the wild card, but for like my rooting interests, obviously want any of those teams that they're behind to lose games. But I think if it comes down to head-to-head, whoever the division leader is probably the team you want to win at all times. So you want Toronto to just beat the crap out of Boston and Baltimore. You want Texas to whoop up on Houston and hopefully Cleveland can bury Detroit, and then the Royals just have to go and win, and maybe that's enough to get them in there. That's a scenario that could happen. It's just, you know, it's going to be difficult. It'll be fun if it happens, though.
I can't even imagine how – I can't imagine because I've seen playoff series, but just how intense that last series against Cleveland will be if – I would hope, obviously, best-case scenario, that the division would be on the line. Whoever – you know, wins the series, or if the Royals swept, then it would be for the division. But the because it wouldn't be quite the same if Cleveland had the division locked up and then it was just the Royals fighting for that second wild card spot or something. You know, then it's almost like, how does Cleveland approach this? Do they think like, okay, we'll be nice and let them win to get in the playoffs? Or do they think we need to shut this team down because we don't want to end up facing them in the first place? That's probably what they would be thinking. So I guess that would add kind of an added wrinkle to it, even if that was still the case. But man, I would just love for, you know, it'd be like the Indians have 88 wins and the Royals have 87 wins. And this last series is going to decide it all. So, I mean, that would just be a ton of fun to deal with.
Yeah.
Or you could have, if that was the case, if Cleveland had 88 and the Royals had 87 and then the Royals won 2 out of 3, then you basically go into a fourth game in that series, right, to decide who won the division.
For a tiebreaker, yeah.
So that would be really crazy. They finish the season at 3 games against each other, end up tied, and then go into a fourth game.
Tiebreaker, and then one of them ends up with the wild card. You would, I guess, hope. But that's basically just its own playoff series, pretty much.
Yeah,
you know, at that stage, it's just like, oh well, it's another playoff series. You just have to win 3 playoff series to win the World Series, plus probably maybe the wild card if you lose that tiebreaker. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen it yet, and this might be a year where the conditions are really good for it, where you have a lot of those kind of situations because the East is still pretty close. The Central could be close. And you might end up with some wild card closeness too, where you might have a team that has to play a tiebreaker to determine the division, like you brought up in that example, and then still have to maybe do a tiebreak for a wild card to see if they actually make it.
I was just going to say,
like,
how nuts would that be?
Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to have like two different days just completely made up of that. And plus there's travel. I mean, that'd be crazy. You might play in Kansas City one day and then have to go to do a tiebreaker the next day in another city only to get the wild card in a third city, you know, the day after that. And it's just like, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. It'd be really entertaining as long as it wasn't my team, and probably still even if it was. But oh my god, the nerves! Like every
intense
at bat, every inning, it all would be like you literally have zero room for error at that point, just because there's so much different, so many different scenarios bouncing around. It's just it's crazy. I kind of want to see it.
I actually kind of do too. That would be
like,
it's
maximum chaos.
Final season against the Indians, 1-game playoff against the Indians. Oh, now they're tied with Baltimore, 1-game playoff against Baltimore. I mean,
that'd be fun.
And then to see Jason Lockhand for his meltdown on Twitter if the Royals just rip the hearts out of the Orioles,
that'd be delightful.
That would be so phenomenal. Just a little cherry on the top.
That'd be so good.
But something, as I looked at the schedule and results, something we'll end on this note here. But something I noticed we hadn't really discussed so far, the Royals with their last home game eclipsed the 2 million fan mark for the second consecutive year in attendance. So that's pretty cool. They've got 18 games left at home, I believe, 18 or 19. 19. Counted tonight, they've got 19.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you look at 25 to 30,000 per, you know, you're looking at another, I mean, it was what, 2.7 million last year.
Yeah.
I mean, if they keep winning and they're in this thing, I mean, you're going to have sellout after sellout. So it's going to be, and they're going to, I guarantee you, they would open it up to standing room only and maybe even add those extra bleachers for that Cleveland series at the end of the year.
Maybe, yeah.
So 40, you'd be looking 000. At, yeah.
I think that's what they did in some of the games last fall. I don't remember exactly. But I mean,
so that'd be kind of cool. They have, you know, they're probably pretty safely going to get another 2.5 million this year, I would think.
Yeah, I think they're below the pace, but they already hit 2 million, which I don't know how many other times they've done that off the top of my head, but certainly not a lot recently until last year. So good. I mean, interest is there. I mean, they set the the game the other night was a record-breaking game for Fox Sports Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just the interest is there. This team is, you know, it's really easy to get behind them, especially in Kansas City. And it's not really unique to Kansas City, but I think Kansas City is a particularly favorable market when you have a good mm-hmm. baseball team of guys that are, you know, really easy to root for and fun to watch. And there's a lot of drama, you know, that works. And it's pretty clear that, you know, the team is a, you know, good draw in that sense. As long as they're winning, they're going to bring them out. It's pretty fun.
Indeed. So I think with that, we will leave this evening. And Mike, may the Rally Mantis be with you and with the Royals as well.
Oh, boy.
I'm having too much fun with the Rally Mantis. You know, I thought the Rally Monkey was great years ago, and I was jealous.
They still have that my too. Team.
They're still pumping that. If the Royals make the playoffs and make another run at this thing, I mean, the Rally Mantis is it's here to it's never going away. It will never not be a thing. And I guarantee you next year there will be at least a variant of the Slugger mascot costume that has a mantis on the shoulder.
Oh my.
I mean, just think about that for a tick. I mean, you're going to have
it's weird.
You're going to have stuffed mantises with like KC embroidered on it. Maybe a blue mantis.
Maybe they're already selling the little things that people they're putting them on their hats, and masks are being sold out at the stadium now.
What, putting on their hats? What,
like the stuffed mantis that you have?
Oh, okay, yeah,
like because
yeah.
They'll put it on their hat, kind of like when Billy Burns had it on his hat.
Yep.
I just great. It's cool. I guess.
I mean, Cardinals had the rally squirrel. Was that 06? They had that.
Was that the 11th season?
I think it was 06.
What's that long ago?
I mean, the Rally Monkey, that was 2002, I think, because I think that was the year they won the World Series. So, I mean, that's almost, yeah, that's, we're talking a decade and a half.
Right.
Rally Monkey. That's
crazy. Look this up.
Rally Squirrel.
Rally Squirrel. Also, at some point, mm-hmm. teams need to be more creative in naming their random wildlife mascots, because
it was 2011. During a 2011 okay. National League Division Series. So it wasn't that long ago. So 5 years ago. Exactly. So on the 5-year anniversary of the Rally Squirrel and the 15-year anniversary of the Rally Monkey,
we
now have the Rally Mantis. So we can have a group of rally animals and insects that, you know, the mantis isn't quite as cuddly as a monkey or a squirrel.
It's not.
But nonetheless, it's not any lesser rallying. So
I think if nothing else, it was something at the time that the Royals found when they were playing pretty bad and it was goofy, and maybe it shook them out of it. You know,
I at least like that it was organic. You know, it's something that happened. There was a mantis. They came back and won another mantis. They kept winning. Hey, this is fun. Let's keep playing with it, you know. But kind of like in 2003, there was the We Believe thing. You know, that wasn't the slogan for the year.
No, it just kind of happened.
PR department, it just came about, and they made towels and everything. And that was a really cool thing that developed, you know. And then you had next year, you had the Together We Can. That was like the official slogan, and it was horrible. It just everything went wrong.
Right.
So I like at least when things happen organically. So Rally Mantis, say what you will about the Rally Mantis, just don't say it around me. But it happened organically, which is pretty cool. So we'll see. As we speak, Kendrys Morales hit a 2-run home run.
All right.
And and Escobar just doubled. So the Royals are now up 3-0 on the Yankees in the bottom of the second inning. So off to a good start. And I'm going out of town this weekend. I won't be able to watch all the games. I'm going to New Orleans with my wife. First time away from the baby. We'll see how this works.
Take the Mantis with you.
Yes, I should. The Mantis goes to New Orleans. I'm sure my wife will love me running around taking pictures of the Rally Mantis in New Orleans.
Right. But, quick. take our picture.
Quick, take a picture of Rally Mantis on Bourbon Street.
I can just see that. You hand the phone to a stranger and be like, can you take our picture? And then you and the Mantis go running off and your wife is standing there like, oh my God.
Like, I have to deal with this every day. Just take the picture and be glad it's not, you're not married to him.
Can we hurry up here?
Yes, please. So, all right. But regardless of my vacation time, I'll be back next week. And I mean, I think there's a good chance that the Royals have a series with Detroit coming up. So
another big one.
There's a very good chance that the Royals' playoff fate could be decided it could be decided in one way, but possibly not the other. So if they're out of it, we could know by next week. But if they're still in it, then they'll still be in it, and it'll be fun. But if they go out and get swept by Detroit, it's all but over. So
yeah, we'll see what happens. It's gonna feel real bad if that happens. But
you're gonna feel pretty sad about it if that happens. But the Rally Mantis would never let such a thing occur, and that's why we're here. And as long as we're here, we're gonna be talking Royals baseball. We took a week off, but no more weeks off for the rest of the season. It's playoffs or bust.
Yep.
For the Rally Mantis led Kansas City Royals. So thank you so much for listening. As always, we couldn't do it without you guys. Appreciate you listening so much. Before we leave, one quick note that this weekend, even though I'm going to be out of town, if I wasn't, one of the things that I would be looking to do is going to the 14th annual Irish Fest this weekend. And of course, when you think Irish, you think Irish Fest. You're probably thinking Kelly's. They have the after party. We'll be there at Kelly's. What time does it start?
I think 10. I looked at their bands are starting about 10 o'clock on those nights. I think if you're going to Irish Fest, I know they've done this in the past. I don't know if they're doing it again, but there have been shuttles. Irish Fest is at Crown Center. They've done shuttles to Westport so that people can go down to Kelly's and have a good time. It's the 2nd through the 4th. You've got Labor Day on the 5th, so that's Sunday night. You know, you're probably not going to go to work the next day, either by yes. choice or by physical necessity, depending on how your weekend goes. So, take advantage of those shuttles if you do partake in the events, or whatever non your own driving
Uber options, Lyft, cab,
right,
whatever you want.
Yeah, be responsible,
cause be we safe, want you... be smart, have a good time.
Yep, definitely.
That's what we're all about on this team. And don't crush any mantises. Watch for them; they're everywhere. They can be on the hood of your car.
In your mantis research, why are there so many mantises this summer?
Last month?
Because they're everywhere. Everywhere in the Midwest has them right now. It's just like,
Was it the White Sox that tweeted it out on their account?
They had one. The Tigers had one.
They're like, oh, this is really weird. Around.
Yeah, it's just like they're all over the place. I don't get it.
I'm not certain. I do wonder, mantises are prized for their ability to... They eat other insects,
yeah,
very much like spiders, but they obviously don't have webs and such. But so people have them people will like put them in their garden because they won't eat the plants.
They'll eat the other insects that do eat the plants. Yeah.
So I don't wonder if maybe there's a covert governmental operation dropping mantises in to take care of a possible Zika mosquito situation, right? Huh. So I don't know if they eat mosquitoes. I don't know if that's the case. But if they do eat mosquitoes, that's a very plausible scenario where the U.S. is like, let's fly in all these mantises. Let's try and destroy as many mosquitoes as we can so we don't have a Zika outbreak.
And then unintended consequences, the Royals make the playoffs again.
Yeah, Royals possibly win a third pennant in a row and maybe a second World Series. You know what? If that's what we have to do to make America safe –
right.
From the Zika virus, then I will do it. I will be okay.
You'll fall on that
seeing
sword.
Lots of praying manti around. I don't know if that's the proper term for plural of mantis, but
sounds we'll go with right it. Enough for me.
So may the Rally Mantis be with you all, and may you all have a good time at Kelly's and Irish Fest this weekend if you're going, which you should. But until then, Mike and I will see you again next week. So be sure to tune in. But until then, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at BPro Kansas City. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
And that was Sinfonia in A Major by Sam Martini. It's noted that the third vicar of Dunshire would play that every night before delivering sermons. It's a fine piece of music. It's 10 past the hour here on Vault Public Radio. We wanted to remind you, dear listener, that this week is Pledge Week at the Vault. Your support is vital, and giving to Vault Public Radio is one way to help support your community. And speaking of community, you won't find a better friendly community than the staff at Kelly's Westport Inn. Like public radio, Kelly's is a staple of the community, a standard, an icon, a Kansas City tradition. Fine patrons like yourself have been supporting Kelly's Westport Inn since 1947, when, I'd note, that Randall Kelly poured his first pint. Contribute to Vault Public Radio today, you can get an official VPR tote bag, or you could stop by Kelly's for an affordable pint, the best pizza in town, and a few games of Papa Shot. We're grateful for your support at VPR and for your support at Kelly's Westport Inn. Enjoy the tradition. And now, 4 hours of Best of the Baroque Period, followed by the Amstein Theaters and The Horse You Rode In On, hosted by Joseph Guevara Amherst.